Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Our guest on Edgewise today is Michael C. Noble. Mike is a managing partner at Camden Consulting Group, and he oversees all of the firm's strategic business development activities and client engagements while providing leadership development coaching and consulting to senior executives. Under his leadership, Camden has established a reputation as a thought partner in the growing talent management arena. Welcome to Edgewise, Mike.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Okay, let's start with a high-level topic. It's critical that those who are responsible for choosing leaders who will be in charge of change be very selective.
It's particularly true for companies that are challenged with changing markets, changing economic conditions, changing demographics in their customer base or even their employee base. It's the responsibility not only of the CEOs themselves, but of the board of directors and the shareholders to make sure that they have leaders who are capable and willing to make the changes that are necessary for their organizations to be successful down the road.
So what would these leaders and members of the board be looking for?
First, they're looking at the experience that the person has. Have they demonstrated that they've been able to lead change initiatives in the past? They're looking at people who are innovative and creative. They're looking at people who have a desire to lead an organization and lead people through the change that's required. If they're just looking at somebody based on their experience, somebody who's been a good manager, who has been excellent in managing through the status quo, they may be overlooking a certain quality that they'll need in their leader going forward.
So you need somebody who has had previous experience with a change initiative.
That's always helpful. You may not see in every good leader the need in the past to drive significant change, but you can generally see if they've been able to build an organization, to adapt an organization to conditions in the past. And that's something you can look for in the interview process, in the whole selection process, somebody who's shown the ability to adapt to changing conditions. And if they've been able to do that, you have a better chance of success.
And I would assume that if the company sees a new mission for itself or an additional operation that it wants to take over, it needs someone who can get followership within the organization.
Yes, absolutely. In one particular situation where a company was looking for a new CEO, the senior director on the board stated, "I don't want somebody who's just going to give us incremental actions. We want somebody who's got a clear vision to the future and is willing to take the bold steps to get us there." The company had a very successful history. However, they had a fairly limited product line. It was a consumer products company. They had a narrow set of distribution channels. The board was concerned about the future if that particular product line became obsolete, and they didn't feel that the product line was necessarily diverse enough, and they were looking for a CEO who would be able to diversify the product line and get the company into new areas. What they ended up doing was selecting somebody who had been a senior executive in the company, had been very successful as a senior executive, knew the nuts and bolts of the company inside out, knew all of the finances of the company, and knew the operations of the company extensively. But they weren't quite sure that the person had the ability to lead the organization into the future. However, after doing a search, they didn't find anybody else in the external marketplace who they felt comfortable with. So they decided to go with this seasoned executive, and their hope was that this executive would be able to lead the organization into new areas, new product lines, new distribution channels, new markets. What they found ultimately was he was confident in his abilities to manage the existing business and a little bit cautious about moving into new areas. And the company was successful for a number of years. He continued to fine-tune the operations and finances and cut the excess fat out of the company and continue to be profitable for a few years. But no major changes were made. And what the board had feared actually occurred. The market shrunk in their particular area. They didn't have a diverse product line. They weren't able to expand their business, and the company, instead of growing, started to shrink. Profitability started to wane, and the company ended up exiting that CEO and looking for a new CEO.
So they had an individual who had the ability to squeeze all the waste and inefficiencies out of the company, but wasn't strong enough to move the company in a new direction.
It was the opposite of what the senior board director said they were looking for, a clear vision to the future and bold steps to get us there. What they didn't have was bold steps. They had someone who was very good, competent manager, was able to take actions to improve the performance over a period of time. But because he wasn't willing or able to take these bold steps, the company suffered for it.
Mike, would it have been wise for the company to think of two different people, one who was a solid manager and one who was a change agent who would help to redirect the organization?
It's always good to bring in people who are change agents and innovators. Sometimes those people are very effective at driving senior leadership towards significant change, but it's the responsibility of the CEO. If they aren't driving the change and embracing the change and modeling change for everybody else in the organization, you won't see the kind of change that's required. You do need to have it in the CEO, but you need to have change at every level of the company.
Right. Now, do you have any other examples?
I can give you another example of a success story where it wasn't the CEO.
Okay, so tell us about what happened there.
He was brought in as the head of manufacturing for a global manufacturing organization in the pharmaceutical industry. The CEO brought him in because the CEO felt that even though the company was very successful in the domestic markets, they needed to change some of their manufacturing and supply chain processes so that they could compete on a global scale with their global competitors. So they brought in the senior manufacturing executive, and he had the mandate from the CEO, or at least he thought he had the mandate from the CEO, to make significant change. And he did envision where the company needed to be in terms of changing its manufacturing processes. He did embrace those changes wholeheartedly himself, and he came into the organization and just jumped right in and started making those changes. At first, he actually failed miserably. And part of the reason was it's not enough just to envision the change and embrace it yourself. You also have to have a good process to make it happen. When he came on board, he had a vision of where he wanted to be and marched forward very quickly on making changes. But what he didn't do was engage all the other people in the organization who needed to be engaged in that process to make sure that they understand why there's a need for change and what this change would mean for them and why it was going to make the company successful down the road. Change is hard. So these people who were being told that change was necessary were resistant at first. This particular executive had to step back from it after he first started making the change, re-enlist his colleagues, his direct reports, and the entire organization, and then start making the change. And over a period of 2 or 3 years, he made significant changes in the organization. It made a tremendous difference in their competitiveness and the profitability of the company. He showed the leadership in making that happen, but he had to have a process to make it happen. At first, he didn't, and then he was able to understand that a process was necessary, engage and enlist other people in that process, and he did it successfully.
It seems to me that in these two cases, the problem isn't so much the individual who tried to bring about the change, but the people who selected the individual. What do you think?
I think in both cases, they made mistakes. In the first case, obviously, they selected somebody who hadn't demonstrated the ability to drive change. And in the second case, they knew this person had the right skills and the ability to drive the change, but they did not give him the right sort of guidance or caution him that there was a process that needed to be undertaken in order for this to happen. What they didn't understand in the second case was exactly how entrenched people were and what they were doing. Change is very hard work. It's emotional. People and organizations and departments have their identities wrapped up in what they've been able to do in the past and how successful they've been. And to disrupt that is upsetting and sometimes causes pain for people and conflict at many levels within the organization and sometimes outside the organization with customers and shareholders. And it's risky. It's potentially fatal for particular executives in the sense that if they're driving change and they don't do it the right way, they could have failure and they could be discarded by the organization because people just reject what they're trying to do and they didn't go through the right process. A vast majority of major change initiatives do fail because they don't have the right people driving it, they don't have the right process to make it happen and to sustain it for the long term.
Okay, Mike, can you just list the steps in the process of change?
I'm a big advocate of John Cotter's model of change, and The first thing you have to do is assess the market and understand, why do we even need to make change? And that's what Cotter would call, I think, establishing a sense of urgency. In that first case, there was never a sense of urgency established to the extent that it should have been. You have to articulate why there's a need for change. We have a narrow product line. We have a narrow distribution channel. And if the product line becomes obsolete or new competitors come in and we don't have the right kind of distribution channels, we're going to be a tremendous risk. So we've got a need to diversify our product set and our distribution channels. So you have to establish that sense of urgency. And part of that is, first of all, assessing where you are and what you think the future might look like. Next step is you have to engage other people. Cotter would call this building a coalition. Get other leaders in the organization to be part of your coalition for change. So it's not just you going out there doing it. You do have to show that personal commitment to it, and you have to embrace it. But one person, one CEO, cannot do this themselves. Then there's a whole process of constant communication of what we're trying to do, what we are doing as we engage in the process, how we're being successful, what our challenges are going to be as we engage in this, and giving people the resources to make it happen. Sometimes what happens is people say they want change in organizations, but then they don't dedicate enough talent or financial resources to make the change happen. They just say, go ahead, keep doing what you've been doing all along, but also do the change, but they don't give them the time and the resources to make it happen. Then the final process is communicating what we're doing, how we've been successful, why this is good for our organization, and instituting it, embedding it in the way we do business going forward, and our business strategy, our operations, and our culture.
Okay, now sometimes change is implemented, but then the organization slips back to its traditional ways. What can leaders do to nail the change down?
You have to make sure that people see and experience what the change means for them in terms of the long-term success of the organization, and that it is a change not just on a one-time transactional basis. It's something that you have to consolidate into your organization. All these changes have to become part of what your system is, part of what your culture is. That's where a lot of change efforts fail. There's so much effort that's required to articulate what the change is and engage people and actually execute on some of the change initiatives, that there's a fatigue that sets in. People just get tired of the change, and then it peters out at the end, and you revert to what you were doing in the past. But what's really critical and sometimes missed in change initiatives is, okay, let's make sure that we have institutionalized and systematized and embedded in our culture what we are doing now and how it's different from what we did before. Articulating to everybody, here's where we were, here's where we've come, and here's where we're going. And this is why what we've done so far has been successful, and it's going to help prepare us for the future.
We've been speaking to Michael C. Noble, managing partner at Camden Consulting Group. Mike, thanks for being with us on Edgewise.
Well, thank you.
Today's business climate adds a new layer of uncertainty and accountability, making performance management even tougher to navigate. AMA has developed a new seminar, Performance Management, Minimizing Stress, Maximizing Effectiveness, which gives new managers a time-tested roadmap for developing and reviewing performance that aligns with rapidly changing priorities and organizational goals. For more information on this seminar, visit our website, amanet.org, and type 2822 into the search box. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.